The first one that I've got is aimed initially at Nick, but also I think Brian could pick up too. So as a company that appears to have already had a strong innovation culture, even before COVID, how did you refine or intensify these once you started responding to COVID?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are two elements in that. One is actually bringing different resources from different parts of the company to a much greater extent than maybe what we did before, and that, which really relied on the fusion of the sort of algorithm work with the clinical understanding. I think that was critical in this. And then the second piece was really having a very clear goal. And typically, I think COVID focused everybody's minds in terms of this has to be done incredibly quickly. What's going to be a minimum viable product that you can put together working with clinicians and do that as rapidly as possible? And then I think generally people worked very hard. So weekends, evenings, there was a massive amount of effort that went in outside of the work hours actually to deliver on time. So those were the elements I think that came through. So in some ways it was an intensification of what we were doing.
Thanks, Nick. Anything more on that, Brian? Or I've got another question for you if you wanted to wait for that.
No, just to build on that, I know internally at Kimberly-Clark, it was, you know, I feel we're very innovative, but it did focus in certain areas. I mean, you only have so many resources, right? So the needs or the demands of the COVID response, we were able to focus a little bit more in the key areas.
Thank you. So next question, aimed at Brian, what's the next issue you foresee being globally important for co-opetition?
I think it's the plastics issue. We've all seen it, the plastics in the ocean, the microplastics. I think that's something that we all need to be very concerned about.
Thank you. So the next question we've got is for both of you. So do you think the COVID urgency to find global solutions changed the culture of collaboration and willingness to accelerate the process of innovation for the long term? You know, is it going to make a permanent difference? Who's going to go first?
And I'll kick in here. This is going to be a wait and see. It's like we all played very well together here in the near term. And but I do think it's, and I've heard this through some leadership internally, I think it has kind of opened the door. It's a different way of thinking of, you know, we need to tackle these problems together. And I think you've seen some of that in some of the new forums that are starting to form out there and for these different problem areas like these special workforces. So I'm optimistic that we're moving in the right direction.
Okay.
Yeah, I would see two elements, trust and transparency with the things that came out of closer collaboration. So in the case of the SignCov, the ICU specialist was leaving the ward, coming to talk to us for 20 minutes, going back into the ward, coming out 6 hours later to have another conversation with us. So there was a deep commitment on both sides, which I think was incredible. I think like Brian, sustaining that outside of that is harder, but you do have a bedrock of having worked together in that relationship, and that's been sort of forged in a much more potent environment. So I think that keeps you in good stead as working partners, and building deeper relationships to me I see as being critical.
And I think really to build on that, it's like what I said before, there's no winners or losers. We're all going to lose, right? So if we don't collaborate to help solve the problem, there's really not a winner if it's all for nothing.
Thank you. So I've got a question, if I may interject. So you both touched in your talks about the conversations that you had and the collaborations that you had with universities. And I'd just be interested to know, you know, again, you both touched on how they changed. And is there anything in the way that those relationships changed or developed, again, that you'd like to preserve, post-crisis?
I think from our point of view, Phil, I think it comes down to alignment of objectives is critical. And I think particularly in university industry partnerships, it's finding that sweet spot of the alignment, the objectives, that's important. I think there are different requirements from a university perspective in terms of commercial return versus a company. And those are elements that I think, you know, to some extent remain challenging. I think in the COVID environment, those kind of merged into something in the background in terms of what could be done. So for me, I think it's keeping being able to work at pace across the complexities of a university or a corporate organization. And that to me then comes down to both sides having a clearer understanding of what the constraints and the requirements that both have. And I think COVID's helped that, but I think those types of dialogues need to carry on to make sure that the momentum continues.
Thank you.
I would agree with that. And to kind of build on that, it's from a kind of a scientist perspective, it's almost like, you know, you get a couple of scientists in a room, you know, once somebody from academia, one person from industry, we kind of know what we want to do. But, you know, the way we work would dictate, okay, we got to get legal in the loop. We have to get the agreements. And that's typically when everything comes to a grinding halt. Right. So I think that, I think the trust, and we can, and the issue we were had, we can move much faster, right? Because there was that trust, and so I hope that we can kind of continue that moving forward.
Thank you. So I was going to also ask the same question about the relationship with government, but we'll park that because the questions are flooding in now, and a kind of international government-related question, I suppose. So a question for both of you, which nation should we be developing closer collaborative ties with in the midterm?
That's a great question. I can answer that from the perspective of data and health, I suppose, is the lens I look at it through. And I'd say that we already have very strong ties into the US. So the transatlantic collaboration is very strong. The challenge in the sort of analytics data piece as you go eastwards is the different information governance frameworks. And that presents different challenges in terms of how you access and work with data. So you can see countries like Singapore, which have a very advanced analytics capabilities and data, you know, the types, those are countries you can partner with. Others where the healthcare systems are more fragmented, present different sorts of challenges. And actually you have to put in a huge amount of work actually to change that.
Thank you.
Yeah, from my perspective, like I said before, we have a global footprint. So we kind of work across, you know, Asia, Europe. We kind of work all across the globe. I wouldn't say one part is any more important.
Thank you. A kind of related question on co-opetition. Would you say this would also apply to the kind of East-West relationships? You know, or I think you've answered the question, was it more transatlantic? And has the pandemic improved the chances of East-West innovation collaborations or polarized them? Or are you saying that they're there already?
I would say politically it was more polarized, but I think that there probably was better or more exchange of information.
Thank you. So switch of tack from the questions now, remote working, which we're still doing now. How did remote working affect your ability to be able to innovate? What was good about it and where were the challenges?
For me personally, this probably goes back to last April or May after the shutdown, after we put the protocols in place. We never really shut down a lot of our key innovation programs because, remember, our production facilities never shut down. I mean, there was all the COVID precautions of wearing face masks, take the temperature, you know, signing the declaration and things like that. So we kind of did the same thing in our pilot facility so we could continue to do the innovation. And then, like all of us, you know, we were, you know, Skype, Zoom, or whatever. And in some ways, the information exchange was probably more efficient in terms of meetings and whatnot, because you didn't have as many sidebar conversations and stuff like that. The one piece that we missed was kind of that spontaneity of meeting a colleague at the coffee machine and you talk about things that just kind of randomly happen and then boom, you have an idea. That was the piece that I think everyone is missing. The tactical aspects of having meetings and things like that, that's good. Another thing is for some of us that commute, you picked up that commute time that you could actually work or do some things. Yeah. So you probably actually put more time into work.
Yeah, I'd agree with everything Brian says. The only addition I would make is sometimes I miss that sort of whiteboarding and brainstorming, which you can do on Teams, but face-to-face, there's a different quality to it, and that kind of is what I missed.
In addition to the relationship and partnership building with, like, suppliers and things like that, missed that opportunity as well.
Yeah. So, a question for both of you again. What do these evolutions mean to intellectual property and competition for the future, as far as both of you are concerned? I think it's building on that kind of co-opetition question that we had before.
I mean, I'll have a crack at this. I mean, I think it's a really interesting question. And I know Oxford, through Structured Genomics Consortium and other groups, has done a lot of work about what you can do in the pre-competitive environment. I think COVID has shown that you can do much more of that. But I think at the same time, you've got to be clear about the downstream point where the commercial or the IP piece comes into play. And that, I think, there needs more thinking. And that will vary by industry, by opportunity of what you're looking at. So there are those twin tensions. And I look in, the, say, the world of data. You know, you can say data is pre-competitive to some extent, but there are different tensions downstream of that, how you define the IP. So I don't think there's any straight answer that just gives you the panacea of what that should look like. It's very much on a case-by-case basis.
I agree. It's going to be case-by-case. I think an excellent example of this is Volvo. You know, they're known for, you know, patenting the three-point harness, and they just gave it to the complete, to the whole industry. I mean, it was a safety thing, right? So if there's a key innovation out there that would combat COVID or would fix the ocean plastics issue and things like that, I think there's, you know, something like that should be shared. We could drive it quicker. And I think there's enough opportunity there that everyone can benefit.
Thank you. So we're down to some rapid fire questions now, because we've got about 5 minutes left. So, how will you maintain the pace and intensity of innovation in other areas once the urgency of the pandemic wanes?
I think you've got to do that through very focused management and ongoing prioritization. As a small company, we are able to sort of shift quite quickly, but you've got to keep very much your eye on the pulse on business as usual. And that was a challenge that we had during COVID, but that was something we emphasized internally and culturally, saying you've still got to do that. And you have to work harder, I would say, during these situations to maintain that.
Kind of being a scientist, I'm always the optimist. Anything's possible, right? So when I think about what we did, what this world did in combating COVID is quite remarkable in terms of the vaccines and all that. And the way I look at it is like, well, now we're going to shift our attention towards the next big problem, which could be, you know, energy, or it could be the ocean plastic crisis. So I have faith that if we apply the same energy and tactics that we use towards COVID, towards these other big global problems that impact all of us, we can get solutions.
Thank you. One question I wanted to know, what questions, Nick, would you ask Brian and vice versa?
So I asked Brian, because raising the question around the plastics crisis, how would you approach that? Because I think you're exactly right on that. That's a major, major crisis. Do you have any thoughts about how you'd approach that?
I think right now, if you look across the whole industry, everybody's kind of in their camps.
Yeah.
We kind of know what people are doing, but I think we need to drop the veil, drop the silos, and work more closely together on the real issues. And I think most of the scientists would love to get in a room and talk about it, but we kind of have the corporate standard work of how we work that kind of prevents that. And my question to Nick would be, really, and I can't think you hit on it, is how do you tap into big data like AI to help drive things more quickly?
That's a great question. It takes a lot of time and a lot of close partnership working with healthcare systems. So you have to talk to the clinicians, the IT people. You have to understand where the data sits, how you curate it, extract, anonymize it. And that requires what I would call a lot of heavy lifting. And no two healthcare systems are the same. So you have to be resilient and adaptable and have that close working relationship to understand how the data sits and how you can work with it.
Thank you. So last question in the last minute. So question for both of you, how much work are your companies doing on the sustainability of your products?
You can go to our website and we've got a 2030 vision. We got the Tiniest Footprint campaign actually over in the UK. You can check us out on the internet, but there's a lot going on in that area.
Yeah, I think on our side, Phil, we're sort of focusing on the product support, the ongoing product development. And then what I would say is keeping the innovation going, which is then aligned with what are the sort of sustainability outputs, what can we contribute that is beneficial within the environment and within the sort of working practices. And that's something we're emerging and building, but we're still a young company on that journey.
Thank you. Well, thank you both for a brilliant session, two brilliant presentations and contrasting examples and a great Q&A. So I really appreciate that. So what you've done is given us some really good food for thought.